So we've been in this series on the seven deadly sins, and so today we're going to be talking about sloth. I thought it was so appropriate this week. There were probably no fewer than three occasions on social media that people posted pictures of sloths, and I didn't even ask them to. Thank you so much. I decided to share one of them. My favorite one, and I didn't share this, but my favorite one was a friend of mine posted this video. I don't know where it came from, but it shows this sloth that's like crawling across the road. If you've ever watched The Sloth, you know what I'm talking about. It's like crawling across this road. And then you see this car coming at like Mach 3 down around there. And I'm like, this is not going to go well, right? But sure enough, the sloth just keeps stretching out. The car's like, and just darts around it, flies off the road, and the sloth's still just doing this as it crosses, the road. I was like, boy, if that isn't a picture of what we're talking about, I don't know what is. We're going to be getting into a number of places in the Bible today. So here's what I would encourage you to do. For those of you that have your cards, you know, your Connect card on the back, there's a place for sermon notes. And so I would invite you just to kind of write these things down as I talk about them. That way, as you go throughout the week, you can reference these scriptures that we're going to be looking at. You know, when it comes to the idea of sloth, I think that there are some things that we get right, and I think that there's some things we don't think about very much. You know, when you think of a person that is slothful, we typically think of a person that is lazy, right? And that's kind of the image that immediately comes to mind, and that's totally fair. We're given these warnings in Scripture about that. I mean, if Paul talks about this in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10, he says, "If man doesn't work, neither should he eat." Now, there are some things that we obviously have to keep in mind, because some people will look at that verse and be like, see, so everybody should work. But if you keep the whole counsel of the Word of God in mind, it also factors in things. There are some people that physically can't, that we do have an obligation. Even if you look over in James chapter 1, we have this obligation to care for the widowed, the orphaned, and the poor. And sometimes people are in these circumstances not because of something that they've done, but because, you know, life has happened. And in those instances, you know what, we need to step up. We need to be the body of Jesus, and we need to take care of them physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. That being said, and I know this is going to stun some of you, did you know that there are lazy people out there? I know, that totally blows you away. Now, this is totally worth the price of admission today, right? That part that you already knew. These are the people that don't want to work, but they want to get. That's the kind of person that Paul is talking about there. You're under no compulsion. You're under no God-given obligation to basically enable them in a life that is at its root sinful. You don't have that obligation. Proverbs 26:14 kind of gives you this picture of what the slothful person looks like, or you might also call them the sluggard. The sluggard doesn't get out of bed. He just flops like a wet fish. Now, there's a picture for you, but Solomon was probably onto something. He just flops like a wet fish. So, you know, just kind of flopping around in the bed, but not wanting to do anything. Or they're like a rusty door hinge. And by the way, rusty door hinges are annoying. So you have these images that Solomon is trying to paint for what we wouldn't describe as a virtue. He's trying to describe this is a vice. This is something that has a hold on you. And the problem is you might be slothful in some areas, but as you cultivate this as a part of your character, as you cultivate it as a habit of your life, it's going to spill over into other areas of life. Now, obviously, I have four girls, daughters, that is, five if you count my wife, who's in the house with me, totally outnumbered. Here's the good news. I have a male dog, Duke. He brings balance to the force, right? But the girls were talking about this series, or at least Kaylee was mentioning something, and Avery. And Avery mentioned to Kaylee, because Kaylee's out of town last week, Avery said, you know, I really wish that you were at church last week, because Dad talked about anger. Now here's Kaylee's move. She looks at me and she goes, what are you talking about this week? You know, I'm like, yeah, this is going to go well. I said, well, I'm going to talk about sloth. And she says, well, what's sloth? I said, well, some of it has to do with laziness, but there's a little bit more to it. And she goes, well, I'm glad Avery's going to be there. So now we're naming names, people. Anybody else want me to name names? All right. here's the thing. Let me give you some characteristics of the slothful person. And I love that Ray Ortland points a few things out that I thought was very beneficial as I was studying this week. Here's one characteristic. And as I go, here's the thing. I just want you to ask, is this me? Just, is this me? Here's one. The slothful person, they will not make up their mind. They just won't make up their mind. Know anybody like that? Now, look to your right. Now, look to your left. Know anybody? I'm kidding. They won't make up their mind. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 9 says this. How long will you lie there? And when will you rise from your sleep? Now, here's the idea of what Solomon is getting at. You know, sleep really isn't talking about literal physical sleep in this case. It's talking about a person that is basically just indifferent. They're just lying there. Sleep is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for a person that just doesn't care. And so he's saying, how long are you going to be like this? How long will you just lie there? It's also, and that's why I said, they have a hard time making decisions, or they just refuse to make decisions. This is not the kind of person that in a time of war that you want to be one of your generals, if you know what I'm saying. Here's a crisis. What are we going to do? You don't want that person in leadership. Here's the funny thing. When it comes to leaders, there can be some characteristics that if they're not careful, they can be a little bit untoward, right? Because these are the people that take charge. They're going to get out front. They're going to blaze the path. They're going to blaze the trail, right? With it, if you're not careful as a leader, you can flat blaze the people. And that's obviously not the goal, right? On the other hand, you might have somebody that, well, is very representative of Proverbs chapter 6, verse 9. They're indecisive, and in fact, they don't want to make a decision. And why don't they want to make a decision? Is because a decision is a commitment. And when you have a commitment, you have obligations, and when you have obligations, it's expected that you act. But if I sit there and I just kind of ruminate all the time, then I never actually made a commitment to anything at all. That's a characteristic of a slothful person. In other words, they're mentally lazy. Here's a second. They aren't finishers. They're not finishers. Now, again, you don't have to be looking around right now, but they're not finishers. Here's the idea. This person, maybe they finally get going. You know, they actually got out of the bed, right? So they got going. But then once the work really started, it was just too much. And once it got difficult, the original drive just kind of went away. Now, here's where this can happen. This can happen at work, right? A person is really good with ideas. Know anybody that's great with ideas? They can envision all kinds of stuff. It can happen at work. It can happen at home. It can happen in your marriage. It can happen with your friendships. It can happen with planning vacation. It's like John Maxwell said, you know, when it comes to New Year's resolutions, it's not about making resolutions. Resolutions aren't that hard to make. It's managing the resolutions that you make. And that's what happens when you wake up roughly on January 2nd and you go, now what did I say yesterday? That's managing your decision, and that's when it gets really hard. That's why I've always said the easiest day of a marriage is the day you get married. That's the easiest day. Everybody's celebrating everything, and then you get to day two, and then you get to day 100, and then you realize this. There's some things that you didn't know were coming. Well, that's life. John Lennon was right. Life is what happens when you're planning other things. Things just happen, and then you're like, okay, are we a team or are we not? When you think of the slothful person, and this is the thing, you have to be more than just a big idea person. You have to be the person that knows the way to accomplish the big idea. And the slothful person, they might be huge on ideas, but they don't do the work to accomplish it. Let me give you Solomon's wisdom here in Proverbs 26:15. He says, the sluggard puts his hand in his food, but he lacks the motivation to get it to his face. Not good enough to have it on the plate. It's certainly not going to nourish you, which, by the way, is kind of what food is for. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the show Beat Bobby Flay. Anybody else watch Beat Bobby Flay? That's like the best show on that. That's really the only show I watch on that channel. What am I talking about? But Beat Bobby Flay. So you have these competitions, and they're always looking for what just has the best flavor. But they always talk about presentation as well, right? Who made the plate look the best? Well, here's the thing. You could cook up a storm. You could have the most beautiful plate, but it isn't going to serve you well if it stays there. It's eventually got to get in your mouth. And this is the thing, that's finishing it. Starting it was the cooking, the second might be the presentation, but the third is the eating. It's the getting busy with it. The slothful person is not a finisher. Third, slothful people have a hard time facing things as they are. And here's why. Because it might be hard. They might have a hard time admitting some things about themselves. Rather than embrace the challenge of life, the slothful person is going to dream up excuses. In Proverbs 22:13, you see just this characterization. He says, there's a lion outside. I'll be killed if I go out in the streets. And you sit there and you go, what does that have to do with not facing things as they are? And the answer is, Solomon is using this as a figure of speech to make a deeper point. Here you have a person that's in the city, and their excuse for not getting to work is there might be a lion in the streets. Right? In other words, I'll grasp onto anything to avoid the hard work that might be in front of me. There's a lion out there. The funny thing is there might be actually a lion in the home that they're already in. It just might not be a literal lion. It might be something else. Slothful people have a hard time facing things as they are because facing those things is difficult. Slothful people have a hard time being honest with character defects because that requires work and God's grace to overcome it. Here's what this points out, is that sloth fundamentally is a sin of wrong desires. Just like all of the other problems that we're dealing with, these are desires that are somewhat out of place. Now, that may not seem to be the case, but that's what it is. If you look at Proverbs chapter 13, verse 4, it says, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing. The soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing. Or even Proverbs 21, verses 25 and 26. The desire, do you see it? The desire of the sluggard kills him, for his hands refuse to labor. Maybe another way, if you wanted to kind of reword it a little bit, they just have a lack of right desires. This oftentimes isn't so much about what they do, but what they don't do. It's not about commission, it's about omission. They're just missing out on basic decisions that they should be making every single day. Here's the thing, all of us are craving, all of us have desires, all of us have wants, and this is no less true of the sloth. But here's a little bit of a twist that I want to put on the idea of sloth today, because I think for what I've talked about so far, many of you are sitting there going, yeah, that sounds right. That's at least the way that I've understood it all of these years. And that's good, because I think you're right. I just think it's also incomplete. I think there's more to the idea of sloth than just saying, the minute that you identify a lazy person, then you know that you're dealing with sloth. You are, but there's more to sloth than just that. Let me give you something else to think about. Tony Reinke was saying slothfulness thrives in busyness. Did you hear that? Slothfulness thrives in busyness. Now that just sounds like a contradiction, doesn't it? Because when we think of sloth, we think of lazy, and when we think of lazy, we think of just inaction. But here's the real thing. Sometimes we are so busy doing the wrong things that we're slothful, literally inactive, about the things we should be doing. You get it? It's slothfulness because of busyness. Here's the way he described it. Let me read it. He says, this shocking manifestation of sloth is what I call the zombie. The slothful zombie may live a very busy life, but he does just enough to get things done so that he can get back to enjoying his comforts. Duties are what he performs, but comfort is what he craves. The zombie lives his routine in a fog, sleepwalking between the weekends. There's a famous pastor named Frederick Buechner, and he writes this of what he was describing as the zombie, but he says this, sloth is not to be confused with laziness. Now again, it's not to say that laziness isn't a part of it. Laziness is, it just isn't all of it. Sloth isn't to be confused with laziness. A slothful man may be a very busy man. He's a man who goes through the motions, who flies on automatic pilot, like a man with a bad head cold. All right, now stop right there, because guys, we are the worst when it comes to head colds. And I know that the ladies are going to say, that's true. Men are hard to care for when they have a cold. But I read an article, and this is free of charge, that head colds are actually harder on men than women. And so we move on. So like a man with a bad head cold, back to Buchner, children. All right, like a man with a bad head cold, he has mostly lost his sense of taste and smell. People come and go, but through glazed eyes, he hardly notices them. He's letting things run their course. He is just getting through his life. What an amazing way to portray sloth. Sloth obviously doesn't just mean being lazy. It can mean that you're busy doing the wrong things. It's spiritually speaking, here's the thing. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a person that is sitting out there saying that they're rejecting God. Instead, the slothful person just doesn't care. Don't care. All right, so let me point out to you this way. One of the fastest growing groups, religiously speaking, in the United States right now is called the Nones, N-O-N-E-S, none. Like, they have no affiliation whatsoever. Some studies would indicate that upwards of 35% of the American population would self-describe as nuns. They're not going to church, but they don't care if you do. They don't have any relationship with God, but they might celebrate the fact that you do, because that's something that you find beneficial or helpful for your walk and for your life. You know who I'm talking about? 35%. Now, that's grown enormously over the last 10 years, because 10 years ago, it was under 20%. Think about that. Now you have somewhere around 35%. Now you sit there and you go, what is going on? And I think the answer of what we're talking about today is, when it comes to matters of fundamental importance, more people are really suffering from the sin of sloth. They're not sitting out there saying that they're an atheist. They're not even sitting out there saying whether or not they know God exists. They're not debating that. They're not even necessarily agnostics. They don't care. That's sloth. Here's the thing, though. You don't actually have to go to the nuns to identify slothful people. You actually don't even have to leave this room to identify slothful people. When it comes to matters of fundamental concern, conviction, belief, and practice, here's a very simple question. How committed are you really? See, one characteristic of the slothful person, if you remember, is they might be huge on ideas, but they have nothing with regard to action. They can come up with plans, but they're not the finisher. That's not what we're called to in our Christian faith, for sure. Here's another way of kind of seeing it in your mind's eye. Sometimes sloth, and this is connected to the busy person, sometimes sloth is actually wrapped up in a person that's a workaholic. Maybe here's why. People call him sir at work, but his house is completely chaotic. It's easier to be at work than it is to be at home. He has more control over what's happening there than what's happening at his residence. And so I'll just stay. Why? Because it's easier. If I'm not there, I don't have to work on it. By the way, here's what that shows. That would be a characteristic of a person that is indifferent to a more important thing. Indifferent to a more important thing. And I also, pastors are about the worst about this. So, you know, I get it. I have watched friends literally, completely have nothing to do with their family in the name of ministry when the first God-given obligation that they have is their home. But they become indifferent to a more important thing. That's another way of seeing sloth. C.S. Lewis wrote a phenomenal book called The Screwtape Letters. I don't know how many of you have read it. I'm a huge C.S. Lewis fan. Here's the idea in The Screwtape Letters. You have Screwtape and Wormwood, so you kind of have this relationship between two demons. And what you have is the older demon is actually training the younger demon on how to make believers fall or fail. As a matter of fact, God in The Screwtape Letters is described as the enemy. So anytime you see the enemy mentioned in The Screwtape Letters, you know that it's talking about God. But I love this quote in The Screwtape Letters. He says, "You may say that these are very small sins," and he's talking about like sins of omission, just kind of slight passing over of things. "You might say that these are very small sins, but it does not matter how small the sins are, provided that their cumulative effect is to edge the man away from the light and out into the nothing. Murder is no better than cards if cards can do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, and without signposts. See, this is the thing. This is what Satan does so well. He shows you the fish. He shows the fish the bait, but he hides the hook. What's the part that is going to hook and drag me to a place that I don't want to go? I'm going to hide that part. The reason that these sins, at least historically in the church, have been described as deadly is because fundamentally they kill something. And what you struggle with when it comes to the sin of sloth is primarily because of what it does to you. Sloth has been considered one of the seven deadly sins. It can be described differently when viewed from different angles. In the world, it can call itself tolerance, but in hell, it calls itself despair. Dorothy Sayers goes on, because this is who I'm quoting. She says this, "It is the accomplice of the other sins and their worst punishment. It's the sin which believes in nothing, cares for nothing, seeks to know nothing, interferes with nothing, enjoys nothing, loves nothing, hates nothing, find purpose in nothing, lives for nothing, and only remains alive because there's nothing that it would die for." So here's the idea. Put it in another way. You have a person that is present in body and absent in spirit. They have checked out of the building. They just don't care. That, my friends, is sloth. One of the reasons that we struggle with this, I'm just going to suggest this, throw this out there, is because we live in a culture that has constant stimulation. Have you noticed that? Studies have even been done on, if you watch a television show, and you're all going to do this now that I say this if you haven't already done it already, but here's the thing. Go and watch a television show and pay attention how long they hold a frame in a given television show. You know what I'm saying? A frame. So how long are they going to have this angle before they switch to another angle, before they switch to another angle, before they switch to another angle, before they switch to another angle? Studies have been done. You would be hard-pressed to find them hold an angle for 4 seconds. And boom, we're on to something else. Boom, we're on to another angle. Boom. Constant stimulation. Now, here's what this has led to. What this has led to is if you don't have something in front of you, if you don't have something stimulating you, we don't know what to do with it anymore. We don't know how to react. And in fact, the normal reaction is, as we describe ourselves, is we're just bored. I'm just bored. Now, we like to say this to our girls. If they say, hey, we're bored, they're like, well, then don't be boring. Now, there's a lot of wisdom in there if you think about it, people. Right? Then don't be boring. But here's the catch. If we get to the point of saying, I'm not stimulated, therefore I'm bored, it's the natural progression from lack of stimulation to boredom to sloth, just complete indifference and complete numbness. And here's the thing, spiritually speaking, this is what happens. It leads to no growth. It leads to no growth. You cannot grow with what you're indifferent to. It just doesn't work. This is not just true of your relationship between you and Jesus. This is true of you and any of your relationships at all. How are you looking? There's a theologian named Kevin Van Hooser. I don't expect you to write that down. But Kevin Van Hooser sees sloth as the besetting sin of, he said, of our postmodern age. The idea that we've kind of gotten past the truth. He says, ours is an age of, and I quote him, despairing indifference to the truth. He goes on to say, sloth is the ultimate sin of omission. Sloth just sits still, unmoved by anything real. Sleeping through a movie, he goes on to say, may not be deadly, but sitting on your hands while the cinema is burning around you certainly is. So he goes on to say, we have to guard against sloth, the temptation to be lulled to sleep when there's something urgent to be done. So he asks this question, is there a cure for this spiritual narcolepsy? Just people that are spiritually just checking out, just don't care. And he said, of course, the answer, there is. There is. It just might not be an easy one. All right, so I'm going to ask some questions really fast. For what I've described so far, how many of you would say, at least in terms of your spiritual life, there are some places that I could fairly describe myself as a slothful person? And here's the way I want you to answer it, and only answer it to yourself. This isn't the look to the right and look to the left part, right? This is look within. Here's a question. How much time did you spend in the Word of God this week? Just how much time? How much time did you spend in prayer this week? How much time did you spend serving someone this week? Now, there's only three questions there, right? And again, I'm not trying to beat you up. Before this comes out of my mouth, this goes through me, okay? I'm not trying to beat you up. But how are you looking? I read a study about 5 years ago. The most self-described, the most religious state in the United States, it's about 5 years ago, was the state of Louisiana. Come on. No, I'm just kidding. Love you, Louisiana people. Lived there 3 years. Here was the thing. That wasn't even saying Christian. That just meant religion in general, right? How much time did they spend cultivating things that are described as the most virtuous part of that belief? How much time? You know what the answer was? Maybe 15 minutes a day. And they were the most religious among us. I want you to hear why I'm saying what I'm saying. Is because if we really believe that life is about knowing Jesus and enjoying Him forever, that isn't going to happen if we're not looking at Him. That isn't going to happen if we're not involved in a relationship with Him. It isn't going to happen. That's why I'm asking the questions that I'm asking today. C.S. Lewis wrote a work called The Great Divorce. I encourage you to read it. It's fantastic. He says, there are only two kinds of people in the end. Those who say to God, thy will be done. And those to whom God says in the end, thy will be done. All that are in hell choose it. All that are in hell choose it. Without that self-choice, there could be no hell. No soul that seriously and constantly desires joy will ever miss it. Those who seek, find. Those who knock, it is opened. It's opened. Here's my guess. For many of us, we are just too distracted. What we have traded is we have traded lesser things and we have passed over the greater things. But here's the beautiful thing. You're here. Right now. Right now. My guess, and this is one of the things as I was reading C.S. Lewis this week in The Great Divorce, here's kind of a thought I had. Nobody that I know that's a friend of mine that is an atheist actually thinks, hey, you know what? I want to go to hell. I haven't met one friend that's an atheist that has said that. I'm just going to throw that out there. Not one. But we tend to be asking the wrong questions. I'm not necessarily going to talk to a person and say, so, hey, do you want to go to hell? I haven't met anybody who goes, yeah. That hasn't happened yet. I ask a little bit of a different question. Are you ready to see Jesus for who He is? And are you ready to worship Him? Now, if the answer to that question is no, here's the thing. You made the choice. You just have no control over the consequences. You don't determine those. And this is why my friend Paul Copan, I love the way that he says this. He says, those that say no to God, when they die, they get no God. You say no to Him, you don't get Him. Not just His presence, nothing. Here's the thing. That's not what I want for anyone here. And the other thing that I don't want for anybody here is for those of you who said, no, I've given my life to Jesus. I asked three simple questions and I'm following up again. But have you given your life to Jesus? How much time in His Word? How much time just talking with Him? How much time in His service? Those are just three questions. I had a list of 25, by the way. I'm going to spare you the others, all right? That's three. Maybe it's time to put Jesus back where He belongs. Fundamentally committed to things that are of ultimate significance, and maybe passing on the things that are less. I want to commit some time just to prayer. Here's why, is because you're removed from the craziness of your life right now. That's a good thing. And I just want us to spend some time in prayer. Hugh's going to come up. He's going to lead us in a song. Here's the thing that I ask of you this morning. Just to bow your head, close your eyes. Again, it's nothing magical about this. It's just, let's don't be distracted right now. And what I want to ask you is this. What is it in your life, which of course would be the decisions that you have made, that have taken Jesus from the place that he's supposed to be and put him down, and you've elevated a desire or a want that you've had that really is what you're worshiping? What is that? It's a good time to name it. When we identify these things, by the power and the grace of God, they can be overcome. So what is it? And the second thing I'm going to ask you to think about, pray about, is that God would put back into your heart that craving and that desire for him. It's like St. Augustine once said, our hearts are restless until they rest in you. Our hearts are restless until they rest in you. So we're going to have a time where we sing. After we're dismissed, I just want to say, look, the staff, we're going to be up front. Stephen ministers are here. Our deacons are here. This is a time where it's a privilege for us to meet with you, to listen to you, to pray with you. But here's the other thing. We want you, for to sing here today that don't know Jesus, we have prayed for you all week that today you would find him. Let's just take a moment. Silent in prayer.